Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. And we're going to be talking about mind power in a different way. Those of you that listen to the show, you know how it is with me. I really am supportive of any type of learning that is going to empower us to understand our world better. Mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, it doesn't make any difference to me. Life is a learning curve constantly. Well, my guest today, Saul Salaiasvathy, is a man that has walked a very unique, and in my opinion, a very powerful journey. And he also took on a challenge, this was a challenge he chose, of doing research into Islamic history. Now, why is this such a challenge? Well, Saul is a man who is from a very prominent Jewish family. He was born and raised in Baghdad. And then we're going to find out some more about this story, about his personal life, that I think you're going to find quite interesting. So, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
Your book, Islamic Leaders, Their Biographies and Accomplishments, From Muhammad to the Present. This, when you first told me that you were writing this book, because you were on my show a few years ago with the story about your life, which I found was just absolutely incredible. And I know when I met you in New York and we had a chance to sit down and talk, what became apparent to me immediately is you are a man that went through various circumstances that a lot of people would have just gone ballistic over. I can tell you about people that haven't even gone through half of your experiences that walk around with a chip on their shoulder as big as the Empire State Building, and they wonder why their lives are so empty. But you've opted to go a different direction. You opted to educate because you believe that through education, this is how we make change. Not through banding about and hating each other and this type of thing, but really understanding what goes behind something, why certain behaviors occur, what is the root cause of whatever disorder might be there. And
my mission, Donna, is to open minds.
Yes, open minds.
This is
really
my mission in life.
Mm-hmm. Now, this took you how many years to do your research?
3.5 years.
Wow.
That's in addition to the general interest in the subject for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But just the effort to write the book and to find all the different sources so I can verify the truthfulness of every word I wrote, it took quite a bit of work and, of course, a tremendous amount of time on the Internet.
On a daily basis, we, on the newscast, and through various programs, we're bombarded with all of the darkness that's going on over in the Middle East. You yourself, at the age of 10, were smuggled through Iran to the State of Israel. And in 1960, you came to the United States on a student visa. You served in the United States Army. You are a U.S. citizen. I'm sure there are people that would ask the question, why are you not angry? Why are you not bitter about the experiences you went through?
I don't allow hatred to enter my life because I'm convinced from my own life experience that hatred does not punish the person you hate. It punishes you. And therefore, I don't subscribe to it, regardless of the circumstances.
You have so many people that you did research on. And, you know, anybody that has over 420 leaders stated, and when I was going through the book and I was reading about the many different leaders, I was absolutely stunned. Let's talk for a moment about the Muslim environment overall, because you give some history. About less than a century after Muhammad's death, Islam, by the people that were promoting it, went through Asia, Africa, and Europe. And at the time they did it, it was less than a century after his death, like I said. It was an area larger than that of the Roman Empire at its peak. And it is now the second largest religion in the world and the fastest growing. But you talk about how, for 400 years, and I know this to be true because of some things that I've read through the years, from the 8th to the 12th century, the achievements of the culture was just phenomenal. Talk about a little bit of that, and also how it influenced the actual blooming and blossoming of the Renaissance in Europe.
Yes, actually, the Arabs, especially the educated one, who are somewhat ambitious, they would love to return to those days where they actually controlled all the sciences, mathematics, medicine, algebra, astronomy, astrology, trigonometry, etc., etc. It was just an unbelievable set of achievements that, unfortunately, many of the world population are ignorant about, and especially here in the United States. And so I made it my mission to educate. As I said, I do not subscribe to hatred, no matter what the circumstances are. And it's very important that the Western world learns about the contribution of the Islamic world when they were much more peaceful and they had agenda to educate the world. In fact, even the cleanliness with water, which is indicated within the Quran, was very, very important and instrumental to cleansing the European people. Mm-hmm. The European went through a period of time where they did not take a shower or a bath for 6 months, for 6 months at a time. And the reason for that, they thought that they would lose their immunity system by doing that. Even kings and queens within Europe had that feeling. The Arabs changed that. The people who traded with Arabs learned so much from them, and their language is one of the richest languages in the world. It's just very, very fascinating subject to learn about, and I think the more we learn about, the more we will be apt to choosing to live together in harmony.
I agree. Now, today, a word that is feared, I will just use that one, is the word jihad. And even in some movies, it has been depicted, and it automatically means war. And there are so many aspects of this. And I'm sure there's someone that might be listening right at this moment. Their hackle goes up when they hear it. And they may say, gee, Donna, why is it that you're even talking about this stuff? Because it's history. I'm not talking about advocating any particular dogma. But I think if we don't understand the basis of something, the root of how something has evolved, how are we going to be able to dispel whatever corruption it may have evolved into? Let's talk about the jihad and the military.
Okay. Donna, there were two jihads during the life of Muhammad. Muhammad, as you know, was totally illiterate. He lived and died illiterate. And this is the amazing part of his mission, because Muslims believe that every word of the Quran was given to him by God or through angels, and that he could not, a simple man, illiterate man, could not have written it. So he had the jihad first, which was called the small jihad, and then the large jihad. The large jihad was a jihad of the spirit, a jihad to change people's minds, to change their outlook on life and on history and so forth and so on. So it is a struggle within the person. That was jihad. The other jihad, which was later introduced, especially by the caliphs that came after his life, was to Islamize the world. Mm-hmm. That jihad is what exists today. It's less than 1% of all of Islam that subscribe to that idea. And those are the ones that commit the September 11th type stuff and what have you, is because they think that their job is to finish what Muhammad did not get to finish. And as a matter of fact, they believe in the resurrection, just like in Judeo-Christian philosophy. Mm-hmm. And in the resurrection, it cannot take place unless the world embraced Islam. And within the Quran, there is also a notion that even Jesus will return at the resurrection time and will marry, have children, settle down, and convert to Islam. So it is something that they have been living with for the last 1,500 years, but it had very little to do with Muhammad. This is what people don't understand, and this is why I get very sensitive when I hear falsehood accusing Muhammad of all kinds of things that have absolutely no basis. What happened, which your audience have to learn, is that the Quran did not really exist during Muhammad's lifetime.
Right.
Muhammad himself could not read or write, so he had scribes that took notes of his actions and his words. But it took another 30 years after his death that the Quran was put together. By that time, the caliphs who replaced him had a different agenda. Mm-hmm. And that is how the second jihad was born.
It's very similar to the Bible and the things that have been done. And it's, you know, starting in Constantinople and various things that were written so many, many years after the fact by people that didn't even know, you know, the individual. And I find it very interesting that when we really get into history, when we really start researching history, which is what you've done, and I'll use your word, the falsehoods come forward. So then we can start moving away from fear, but have clarity in understanding that a lot of information that is out there has been misguided because of people that were in the positionings of power, because that was something that when he died, that was a big, big deal, a big deal. There was tremendous battle. Who was the first caliph?
There were four caliphs that came in, one after the other. Abu Bakr was the first one, and he only lasted 2 years. And some books say that he was assassinated, some books say that he died of old age. But he was the closest man to Muhammad during his struggle to Islamize Arabia mm-hmm. at the time. So he was the one chosen, not by Muhammad himself, but by the disciples of Muhammad. Muhammad had 10 disciples as opposed to the 12 that Jesus had. And they decided that they have to choose one of them and call him a caliph. A caliph was like the pope of the Islamic world. There could be only one caliph at a time. So Abu Bakr was chosen by them. And this is when the Shia and Sunni became split. That's when they split, and against all the teaching of Muhammad. He wanted the community, the Ummah, the Islamic Ummah, to be united regardless of color, regardless of race, regardless of status, and so forth and so on. But after his death, this is what happened against mm-hmm. his teaching. And the Shia and the Sunni got split. Now, the way they split is that 10% to 15% of the people felt that Ali was the most likely person to replace Muhammad because he was a blood relative of Muhammad. But most of them felt that he was not qualified. And so they chose a caliph. And then the fourth caliph position was given to Ali eventually.
The history is fascinating. When I think of Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, when I think 1001 Nights, there are so many stories that have survived the centuries that are just absolutely magnificent. And there were some individuals, when I was going through the book, that just absolutely were fascinating to read about. And I had to take it in chunks because there were so many points of information that you gave. You talked about Ibn al, and I may not be pronouncing it correctly, Haytham, who was regarded as the father of modern scientific method and often is referred to by medical scholars as the world's first scientist. They had
he actually wrote the first medical books that lasted 500 years.
Amazing.
It was
amazing.
Translated to all the European languages, and they were used. For example, ophthalmology, about the eyes. It mm-hmm. was the most authoritative books ever written until that time by the Muslim world. And algebra is an Arabic word. Algebra was also developed in an Islamic country, which at the time belonged to Persia, but no longer does.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and many of the greatness that was inherited later was based on the Egyptian builders of the pyramids. I mean, until this very day, scientists cannot figure out how these pyramids were built. How did they handle hundreds and hundreds of tons per one stone, and there are millions of stones, and so forth. So they inherited all that and developed it further. And so they gave tremendous contribution in terms of science and medicine,
right?
And literature.
Yeah, it's just incredible.
The Arabs
are
very, very much poetry inclined, I must
mm-hmm.
say.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the first, even over the Russian people. And the reason for that is that most of them were illiterate, and the only way they could acquire knowledge and love of language was to memorize poetry. And this is how poetry was developed. For example, Rumi is an Arab, you know, a Persian, actually Afghani, type poet, one of the greatest poets that ever lived. And until this very day, his books are being translated and published around the world.
The same with Khalil Gibran. I mean, his
Khalil Gibran,
writing.
Yes. But, you know, the difference there is Khalil really was a teacher type, and he most of his writing he wrote here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was not aware that an Andalusian scientist, musician, and inventor, Abbas Ibn Firnas. Now, he lived in the 800s, and
yes.
he developed clear glass so that people could use it for drinking beverages, and also lenses for improvement of vision. Now, this was a long time before the Europeans got into that. But what really blew me away is that apparently he was doing something that Leonardo da Vinci made drawings about, and that was being able to fly. And he tried to fly, controlled flight. And when you think of the old stories about the flying carpet and all of this, it's just, it's absolutely fascinating to, you know, see what happened. But I also wanted to talk about how, a little bit, how we have gotten to where we are today, because there's so much discord that's going on. There are so many people grabbing for power, different nations within the tribes of the Middle East. There's all this conflict, and it's just like a cankerous bunch of boils that are just waiting to be lanced, to be perfectly frank. It's as if there's a toxic substance. It's going to have to be just gotten rid of because it's just destroying so much. The first Saudi state was established around 1744, and then it was destroyed in 1818 by Ali Pasha. Let's talk about a little bit of that history and how the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia was actually established.
Okay. Well, Muhammad was born in Arabia. It was not called Saudi Arabia until about 300 years ago when Ibn Saud reconquered it and added his family name to the country name. It became Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. So it was the center of Islam for 1,500 years because of Mecca and Medina, the two cities, the highest reverend in Islam. And so they have, the Saudis have possession of the highest value in Islam, the original Qurans, for example, and so forth. So their universities are very, very important in Islam in preparing people for the future and so forth. But Ibn Saud was very extreme. He was totally different. He was different even from Muhammad himself. And he reversed many of the rules of Muhammad himself. Muhammad did a tremendous amount to liberate women, for example. Very, very few people in the West know that. Women could not inherit anything. Women were less than a camel value. And the reason Muhammad instituted the rule of marrying up to four women was not for a sexual reason. It was because of lack of enough men compared to women in the society. Mm-hmm. Men were being killed by the tens of thousands in war. And so Muhammad did not want the women to grow old and destitute and without any protection and without ever experiencing motherhood. And he drew on his own life because he had a terrible childhood, was born without a father, and his mother died when he was only six. So he had great empathy for women. And this all was reversed completely when Ibn Saud took over. And today there are more PhDs, women, per capita in Saudi Arabia than any other place. And yet they are not allowed to drive a car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when you judge the Islamic world, you have to judge them on the basis of local customs rather than generalities.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to credit them where credit is due. For example, Columbus used an astrolabe in his navigation that was developed in Morocco. Under Islamic rules.
Mm-hmm.
Nostradamus did the same thing about the same time, 500 years ago. So they really contributed tremendously. They want the acknowledgement. They want to bridge with the West. But they were put behind the times when colonialism took place. So we have to look at their history of suffering under colonialism. And all the colonialism in the Arab world, except for the Turks, was Christian colonialism, was a Western colonialism. And for hundreds of years, they suffered under them. and they were suppressed, and all their assets were siphoned out by the French and the British and the Dutch and the Portuguese and the Spanish and so forth and so on. And so when you look at the political environment now in the Middle East, unless you know this background and take it into account, you will never understand the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Very true. One of the things that is really, really very upsetting to many people, and I can't blame them, is Sharia law. Can you go into
Yes.
that, describe how that come about, what it is, and what changed so much of these laws? I mean, it's unbelievable what they expect, what they will do. It's hideous to our minds.
Yes. Actually, Sharia law began when Muhammad finally conquered Mecca. He was 60 years old at the time, in the year 630. And he died 2 years later. So after he conquered Mecca, he became like a judge, like a king sitting in judgment of his people, like King Solomon did in the Hebrew times.
Mm-hmm.
So people started writing down how he behaved, what he spoke of, how he ruled, and so forth and so on. That became the beginning of Sharia. And to tell you, one of the liberalisms that he instituted, for example, homosexuality, it was punishable by all three great religions with stoning to death. And he changed that to 100 lashes, both for men and women. In other words, he was liberal in many, many areas, brought liberalism, but within the code, within the society, what's permitted within society. So most of the Sharia laws that you see today, by which some countries are being ruled, was instituted and put together by those who took over after his death.
So and they are making...
It also entered the Quran without his real permission or his advanced knowledge, because, as I said, the Quran did not really exist. Unfortunately, many Muslims themselves around the world do not know this fact. They don't know that the Quran did not really exist during Muhammad's life.
Mm-hmm.
Bits and pieces were being written on parchments and stones and all kinds of leather. And that was put together much, much later under Uthman, who was the third caliph.
So, Goliath Fathi, your book is something that I think belongs in every school library. I think it is a book that is not unlike other historical books. One, it was a labor of love on your part, and though you are Jewish, you did not write this. It is not presented in any way with any kind of what I call distorted information. You've researched all
agenda.
Of these different personalities, and you've got this information, and it's so important, I think, to really understand history. And I know in the United States, this is something that's not encouraged so much in school. The studying of history has been,
yes.
let's say, discouraged, which is not good, because if you do not know and understand history, then you cannot really understand sometimes what the root cause for a disruption or a bad patterning of behavior or action, what it is, where did it come from? And so many times the blind lead the blind, and things get compounded until it's like I said a moment ago, a hideous batch of boils that somehow is going to have to be lanced so that the infection, the distortion, can go away. And your book, Islamic Leaders, Their Biographies and Accomplishments, is just absolutely an amazing accomplishment. And having interviewed a number of people of the Muslim background and knowing how so much of what is done today and promoted by particular leaders in particular groups is an abhorrent to them. This was not a part of their life. This was not how they lived within their cultural environment in the Middle East. And yet, the dictates of a few, old history, it's not unlike what happened in Russia, in Pakistan, in Germany, and there's always that tiny, tiny amount, and as you said, like 1%, that creates so much distortion that those that are not educated will believe the 1% that's promoting these distortions thinks that that's it. That's the whole ball of wax, and it isn't. It really isn't. And your book goes a long way to giving information about these various people that had political, powerful, spiritual influences within a structure. And I think you have just done something here that's a phenomenal accomplishment. Now, I know you've got a website, and it's your name, and anyone can go to your website and find out about your other books. If nothing else, they should read your story about your life and what you went through. Saul Salias Fossey, that's S-A-U-L-S-I-L-A-S, F like Frank, A-T-H-I. Saul, I want to thank you for being my guest today.
I thank you, Donna. I hope we get some wisdom to some people.
I think, if nothing else, it might tickle their curiosity to find out more about what they don't know. And your book goes a long way.
Thank you for what you're doing.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for just a moment. Again, my thanks to Saul Salias Fossey. Islamic Leaders, Their Biographies and Accomplishments. History, study it. We can change things if we know the truth. This is Donna. We'll be back in just a moment.
Celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Northwest Women's Show, Friday through Sunday, March 1st through 3rd at Seattle's CenturyLink Event Center, where you'll find 3 days packed with fashion, fitness, food, and fun. Each day features life-changing seminars and, of course, shopping, shopping, shopping. Meet smooth crooner Philip Lomax from The X Factor. Enjoy live music from country music star Jared Neiman and others. Learn what the numbers can tell you about your future from numerologist to the stars Glynis McCants, and get a peek at how the Ice Chip Grannies successfully navigated ABC's hit show, The Shark Tank. JCPenney will give you a heads up on trends for spring with fashion shows, and everyone loves those smoking hot firefighters. The Northwest Women's Show, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 1st through 3rd, sponsored by Snoqualmie Casino, Safeway, and BECU. Show schedules and ticket information at nwwomenshow.com. Sponsored by Snoqualmie Casino, Safeway, AARP, and BECU.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into if you would like for me to Light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And for those of you that are listening to the show for the first time, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Quickly, I want to say tomorrow is the beginning of a very powerful weekend. Yes, it is the Northwest Women's Show here in the Seattle, Washington area. And for those of you that are going to be here in the Pacific Northwest in Western Washington, the gals, boy, I hope you will come along. Guys, if you choose to join your significant other, be prepared, because you're going to be seeing more women in one location than you've ever seen in your entire life. And they are having a blast. Why? Because there's entertainment, there's wonderful food, there's all kinds of speakers, there are services that are there. It is just all oriented towards women. And I've been involved with this great organization for a number of years. They're celebrating their 25th year with the Women's Show. That's right, 25 years. And it's just growing and growing, and it's always changing, and there's just so many wonderful things that are part of it, including the Women's Forum that I'm going to be presenting tomorrow with six outstanding speakers from the Pacific Northwest who are going to be sharing their wonderful stories with you. They're authors. They've been featured on my show. They are just really great people. So if you want information about that, go into the Northwest Women's Show and .com, and you'll find a listing of my guests and a brief bio about them. Also, I am going to be in booth number 405. I'll be available for many readings, and I've got buku books. I'm going to have CDs there, too. So come on by, say hello. And then I'm also on Saturday going to be speaking about Quantum Mind, the intuitive genie within. So come along, whether it's for one day or for the entire weekend. Give yourself a gift of being pampered, being entertained, and more than anything else, giving yourself a gal's day that is absolutely wonderful. So do check it out, northwestwomenshow.com. You won't regret it if you join us. Believe me, I've been doing this for 12 years, and it has just been wonderful. I wanted to share a quote with you by an Oscar Pistorius, who is an Olympic sprinter, and he is a double amputee. That's right. And so he said that his mother used to tell him, "Carl, put on your shoes. Oscar, put on your prosthetic legs." Carl is his brother. And he said, "So I grew up not thinking I had a disability. I grew up thinking I had different shoes." Isn't it all about perspective? What is it that enables one person to think in a positive modality and another person to think in a negative modality? Quite frequently, it has to do with personality styles, but also the environments that we come up through. If you come up through an environment where everything is negative, the world is going to you-know-where in a handbasket, then that becomes a part of your hardwired persona, if you will. And you could become a worrywart with big capital W. So you need to understand that if that's your patterning, you can shift it. You can rewire your brain, your attitudes, your feelings, your perceptions, but it is going to take mindful effort to do that. If you're a person that's come up in an environment where somebody around you said, "Well, yeah, I've got a stinking situation right now, but I can make a shift. I have to look at this. This is for the greater good, blah, blah, blah," so on and so forth. And I think of the old story. It's a very old story. Nobody knows when it originated, about a farmer. And this is a farmer that had horses and had, you know, just a small place. And farmers always are going through ups and downs in life. And one of his horses became injured. And all the neighbors said, "Oh, that's so damn bad, that's so bad, it's terrible." And he said, "Well, perhaps I just don't know. We just have to take it in stride." And then the story goes on and on and on, and about different things that he encounters. And people say, "Oh, this is so bad, this is so terrible." And then things would shift and change, and they'd say, "Oh, isn't this fortunate that you had this happen?" One of the parts of the story relates to the man's son. And the man's son was out in the field, and he broke his leg. Well, the son obviously is cooped up, and so everybody around him is saying, oh, this is tragic, this is terrible, your son's got a broken leg, you're going to have to do all this extra work. He said, well, we'll just see how things work out. And as it turned out, there were troops that came through. They were looking and recruiting, by force, the young men of the area. The son had a broken leg. They didn't want anybody with a broken leg. So he was passed over. Neighbors come in, oh, wasn't that fortunate? He said, well, we'll see how it works out. This is a person that the story theme basically is how you deal with situations. Life is constantly going to be full of change. There is no way of escaping it. In fact, in my newsletter that is going to be going out tomorrow, I tell a story about a change that's happened to someone today. I mean, this is something that is right, it was just a week ago. And I share that story about an individual that I had a conversation with. And change is something that can come from a direction in a million years we never would have imagined. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to just say, I'm helpless, or are you going to work with it? And like Oscar said, it was his thinking about what his mom and his response as a kid to what his mom would say to him. He never really felt that he truly was disabled. He just had a different pair of shoes. And I think that that brings things back full circle. Remember, if you're going through challenges right now, you just have to ask yourself, how can I look at this so that I see it as something that's going to benefit me and not be destructive in my life? How can I make this a leverage that propels me forward instead of backwards? Do that, and you're going to come out way ahead. More than anything else, it puts the power of your life back in your hands. It's very significant, and it usually is a significant part of whatever story I've found I've read about any person that has become recognized for what they achieve and for what they do. It really does make a difference. And I've got a story I wanted to share with you about Christy Yamaguchi, the world champion skater. Her story was really quite a surprise to me when I came across it, so we'll be talking about that in a minute. But for just a few minutes here before we go to break, I want to share a little bit of nutritional information with you. And I know we've all heard about the benefits of broccoli. We also hear a lot about how everything should be eaten raw. Well, in scientific study, independent on your physiological nature, you may not get the nutrients out of the raw food as you would out of the cooked. Why? Well, it just has to do with chemistry, the way the food is prepared. Now, frozen vegetables, and this has been known for a long, long, long time, even in the infancy of freezing food for all of its crudeness, and now we've become much more sophisticated, but frozen vegetables, for example, broccoli, contain 35% more beta-carotene by weight than fresh broccoli that is shipped across the country. Now, there is something called sulforaphane in broccoli that they're finding may be very, very helpful in fighting off infections that inflame the lungs and the arteries. Now think about that. Inflammation has been proven to be at the base of many disorders, physical disorders in the body. Broccoli, good stuff. Also, broccoli has high levels of vitamin C that creates collagen, and for we ladies, we always want to stay looking good, so this is a vegetable that enables you to have very, very healthy skin. Now, steamed is best. Steamed really is best. That enables you to get the nutrients out of it. Someone told me so many years ago, if you really want nutrients, if you're going to be putting vegetables in water and cooking them that way, cook the vegetables that way, drink the broth, and forget the veggies. Yep, that's what they told me years and years ago. Why? Because all the nutrients went in the water. That's why soups throughout generations have always been so healthy. You put everything in the soup. People are eating not just the fiber of whatever's putting in there, but they're getting the nutrients that have been incorporated and blended because of the slow simmering process. Now, chilies, they feel that chilies have components. It has capsaicin in it, which can prevent blood clots that lead to a heart attack and stroke. Now, this is very, very important. Here is something that if anybody may have a physical condition, if they are willing to work with this, that may enable their bodies to stay healthy and will enable the body to keep from forming blood clots. And it also, nasal sinus congestion, and it's great for metabolism. Yep, absolutely puts the metabolism right where it should be. Those are just a couple of health points. This is Donna Siebel. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to share the story about Christy Yamaguchi. And also, if you want to talk to me, give me a call at 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Siebel is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Quick like a bunny, don't forget the Northwest Women's Show right here in Seattle, Washington. If you're in the area, I do hope you'll stop by my booth 405 to say hello. I'd love to meet you, but more than anything else, between 1 and 3 tomorrow afternoon, I'm going to be presenting 6 speakers that all have something very dynamic and powerful to share with you. And I know that you will enjoy it, so do make that a part if you're coming out. Stop on by, listen to some of the speakers, and just know that they're going to add something to your life. It's going to be quite significant. You'll find out all about it on the NorthwestWomensShow.com website. Go in there. You'll get directions. You'll find about the tickets, all kinds of things. Oops, I almost forgot. If you're coming out on Saturday, be sure you get into the show prior to 3 o'clock for your parking. There is a big game that's going to be held Saturday night. And at 3 o'clock, all of the parking rates are going to be going up to $40 a car. That's right, 40 a car. So you don't want to get hit with that heavy parking fee. So just be sure you put that in your little mental note. Friday and Sunday, no problem. Christy Yamaguchi, not only is she a beautiful woman, but she is just exceptional in her skating skills. And she is loved by millions of people around the world. Who knew that she was living in fear about so much of her life when, you know, when she was growing up? And her story to me was just so absolutely fascinating. And she fell in love with skating when she was watching the men's figure skating finals of the 1988 Winter Olympics. At the time, she was 16, and she had already gotten a number of her own skating titles. She had, you know, her dream from the time she was a little girl was that she wanted to be an Olympic champion. When she watched all of these fabulous skaters, she said, oh, my goodness, when Brian Boitano did his 8 triple jumps did them almost flawlessly. When he won the gold medal, she said, I was jumping up and down. I was just thrilled for him. And she said what really impressed her was when they were talking to him, obviously being the gold medal winner, the news media is just all around him. And when she was watching this and she was watching everything that was being done, her dream of being an Olympic champion, she said, just sank right down to the bottom of her stomach. Quite a visual, isn't it? No way could she ever talk in public the way Brian Boitano did. She said, I'd just freeze. I couldn't do it. She was very, very shy. And she said one of the reasons she loved skating so much is because she absolutely did not have to talk to anybody. She could just express herself with all of these wonderful moves that she did in her skating. She'd do the split jumps, camel spins, spirals. She didn't have to do any speaking. She was just out there demonstrating. She was in her glory. She just loved it. In school, she was terrified whenever she was called upon to speak. She didn't think that this is something she could ever overcome. She said, if it wasn't for my family, I wouldn't be where I am today. She said, I was at the time 16 when I'm watching Brian Boitano. He's talking so comfortably, talking about the people that supported him. And she said, she asked herself a question. Why would she want to do something she feared in pursuing something she loved? That's a good question. Why would she have to do something she feared in pursuing something she loved? Well, she started doing some visualization, and she could see herself being a champion, and she would visualize that. And then she started pulling out some photos of her family. And there was quite a history with her family. Part of her family history was a second-generation Japanese-American. She said it was her maternal grandfather. He fought in the U.S. Army against the Nazis in Europe. And his wife, her grandmother, stayed in an internment camp in Colorado. They didn't feel safe because of the anti-Japanese sentiment that was very strong. It was a war. That's what was happening. And she said she pulled out a picture of herself when she was just a little person. She said she was dark-haired, had a very round face. Her legs were very tiny. Her legs and feet were in casts. She had been born with club feet. Club feet that pointed inward and curled under. For the first 18 months of her life, she was in plaster casts. She had to wear corrective shoes. It was a very hard beginning for someone that eventually was going to be a world champion. But her parents said, we believe in you. Go for what you want. And when she was given a Dorothy Hamill doll, it came from the 1976 Olympics. She said, I'd put that doll when I was skating up so my doll could watch me. She felt that Dorothy Hamill was there supporting her. One of the things, and I know we're getting close to being out of time, she said, I had to learn how to overcome my fear of speaking. And she said, what she started to do was work very, very hard during the years before she became the international champion she's become to just be herself. And she said, the best approach is always being yourself. She said, I don't like giving speeches even to this day. Although I'm always grateful and very honored to be asked. But she said, I have to take deep breaths before I even begin so I can calm myself. Christie said, fear can stop you dead in your tracks. Fear can kill a dream. But facing a fear is empowering. What are you afraid of? What's the one thing that scares you more than anything else? Why not walk right up to it and conquer it, step by step? Christie Yamaguchi, with wise words, and that's a good way for me to finish the show today. Tomorrow we'll be playing a best of Donna. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You are your own boss. Don't ever let anybody else dictate to you how you think, how you feel. You have the right to be who you are. And if you have fears, keep Christie Yamaguchi in mind. Step up to them, face them, baby step after baby step at a time. God bless. Thank you so much for being with me today. We'll be chatting again on Monday, but don't miss my show tomorrow because it's going to be about wellness, mind-body-spirit connection. I know if you missed it the previous week, you'll enjoy it tomorrow. Donna speaking here. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.